Call to order the Senate Committee on Jobs and Economic Growth. Members, we're going to take up three bills today. Our first bill is carried by young Senator Daley, and it's Senate File 488. Senator Daley, I know you have more than a few folks in attendance today, and some of them want to testify, so I want to make sure you have time to fully present it, and so why don't we just turn the floor over to you right now. Senator Daley, thanks for carrying this.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. This bill, Senate File 488, is being carried in the House by Representative Leon Lilly, a Delta employee himself, and has strong bipartisan support, as shown by the House's unanimous approval of this measure last week. I want to take a moment to thank my co-authors, distinguished Senator Metzen.
You get my vote, too.
Thank Senator you. Tomassoni, who unfortunately is not here with us at the moment, and Senator Kielash, who unfortunately is not here with us at the moment. Oh, yes, and you too, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Each of us has a number of employees, airline employees, who live in our districts, and as can be seen by the strong employee turnout at this hearing today, this is an issue of great importance to all of these employees. This proposed bill will exempt airline employees from overtime provisions of the Minnesota Fair Labor Standards Act when the employee accrues overtime due to voluntary, and I stress voluntary, agreement among employees to trade scheduled hours. Before bringing up the supporters of this bill, please let me share with you three main points. The flexibility in scheduling that this exemption would afford airline employees is an item that they greatly value for a variety of reasons, whether it's due to the need to travel long distances to and from work or to care for family members or just to be able to balance the other activities in their lives. This exemption provides employees the ability to balance their work lives with their personal lives. Number two, as you'll see in front of you, there is a list of all of the states. It's a flexibility, this measure is, that airline employees already enjoy in 50 other states. And you can see the list right in front of you, including every state where Delta has a hub operation and or a reservation call center. So this would permit Delta's Minnesota employees to have the same flexibility as they do in every other jurisdiction where they operate. Finally, there is no fiscal note. There is no fiscal impact to the state. Mr. Chair, I'd like to call on Bill Lynch, who is sitting next to me here from Delta Airlines, to share with us a little bit of additional background on how this proposal came to be, and then members of the committee will hear directly from the Delta employees themselves. We have a number of them who utilize already this type of voluntary shift swapping on a regular basis, and they will tell you firsthand why this is so important to them.
Thank you, Senator Daley. Well done. Mr. Lynch, welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Bill Lynch. I'm Senior Vice President of Minnesota Operations for Delta Airlines. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to be here today in front of you to testify on behalf of more than 3,000 employees who have the opportunity to utilize this type of flexibility in the state of Minnesota at Delta Airlines. The purpose of this bill is to enable Delta employees in Minnesota to have the flexibility to voluntarily, and as Senator Daley pointed out, I really want to stress the word voluntarily, trade scheduled work hours with fellow employees that may result in an unbalanced work week. And I'd like to give you a very quick example. Because the airline business is so dynamic, and we have operations that work every minute of every day of every year, we have the need for this flexibility. Employees would love to have the opportunity going forward to be able to trade hours voluntarily with fellow employees so that in 1 week, and I should preface this with Delta pays on a 2 week, 80-hour pay period. So employees would love to have the opportunity to, in 1 week, work 60 hours by trading some shifts with fellow employees, and in the following week, potentially work just 20. And have their fellow employee work 20 in the first week and 60 in the second week. So that flexibility allows them to address personal issues, business issues that where they may have a second operation or job that they perform, and will allow us to continue to manage the operations at our airports and reservation center. This flexibility is currently offered to Delta employees in a large majority of states where we operate. A couple of real key states that I'd like to point out are Michigan, Georgia, California, where we do have large airport operations and or reservation center. This flexibility is allowed provided it does not result in the payment of overtime. Until recently, Delta has been able to allow this flexibility in the state of Minnesota. That is because employees were contract employees and swapping of hours without payment of overtime was permitted under their contract. Employees recently voted to not be contract employees and therefore fall under the Minnesota state law regarding overtime as it relates to, among other things, voluntary swapping. So simply what we are seeking here is to exempt airline employees from the overtime provisions of the Minnesota Fair Labor Standards Act, an exemption currently offered to 19 different types of employee groups, some who work in the transportation industry, such as taxi cab drivers, truck drivers, ship workers, etc. This flexibility would permit Delta employees in the state of Minnesota to have the same work schedule flexibility as their colleagues do in other states. I thank you for your consideration, and at this time, Mr. Chair, if you would allow me to do so, I'd like to introduce some of our employees who would prefer to say a few words.
Yeah, please do, Mr. Lunch.
Okay. So first, I would like to introduce you to Glenn Hammond, who works as a reservation agent on the Iron Range in Chisholm, Minnesota.
Mr. Hammond, welcome to the committee. Senator Tomasoni is not with us, but when he's here, you'll notice it.
Oh, yes. Same haircut.
Mr. Hammond, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. Thanks for the opportunity to share with you how this practically works for us as employees. I personally own my own business on the side, and it allows me the flexibility when I have operational needs on my other business to trade with another employee so that I can tend to my business and still maintain my employment at Delta Airlines. And it works very well for, and everyone that I spoke to in the Res Center up in Chisholm was very much in favor of this. There was not one, whether they were staff union people at the when we were unionized, not one of them objects to what we do. It's a standard policy that we've been under for as long as I've been with the airline, and it functions very well.
And Mr. Hammond, could you just for a little more background, how many employees are up at that reservation center in Chisholm?
The Iron Range Center has about 500 right now, give or take a few. 500 employees, and they travel anywhere from 50 to 75 miles in some cases each direction. So it also gives us the flexibility to double up our shifts so we're not driving so much.
Mm-hmm. Members, any questions for Mr. Hammond? Or Mr. Lunch, why don't you continue to bring up your chorus here?
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Hammond.
Thank you.
Thank you, Glenn. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce you and the committee to Brenda Deutsch, who works in the Sky Club at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee, for allowing. Pardon me?
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. I am from White Bear Lake. My name is Brenda Deutsch, and I work in the Delta Sky Club with 30 other women. Since last September, my husband, who is 52 years old, has suffered three significant strokes, and our life has changed dramatically. My husband's care needs have developed to a stage where if I didn't have flexibility in my schedule, I would not be able to take care of him. At the current time, what I do is I try to work doubles on weekends, which is 16-hour shifts, when my son can come home and take care of him, so I'm free during the week so that I can take him to his various therapy appointments and doctor's appointments. None of this would be made possible if we didn't have the trade policy that Delta offers us. While my husband's company that he worked for did not offer any longer short-term disability, and while we await an appeal from Social Security, I am the only wage earner in my home. I never thought I would be in this position. I never thought I would have to be doing what I'm doing, but I am proud to step into the role of the breadwinner of my home and take care of my family. But I can honestly tell you, working 40 hours a week and managing him and his needs, I would not be able to do that if I weren't able to trade under the Delta policies. Life happens to all of us. I work with 30 women, and I can tell you unanimously that all of those women have situations. We all have life happen to us. Divorce, child care issues, single parenting, life happens. And we work 365 days a year, as Bill said, 24/7, and none of it would be worth it unless we could actually manage our families in addition to our full-time careers. Delta makes that possible. I have a coworker who travels down to Florida to care for her elderly mother. She travels down twice a month, and she makes sure her mom's pillboxes are all in order and makes sure that she gets to any doctor's appointment she needs to get to. I can see the relief in Janice's face when she returns to work. She is renewed. She is calm. She is a better, productive employee because she's able to manage her personal life in addition to her work life. I've been with the company for 17 years, and in all those 17 years, we bid our vacations by seniority, and I've never been able to hold a summer vacation. That would mean 17 years of never being able to take a family vacation with my kids that are off school at that time. By trading my shifts and by having the flexible work schedule that I have, fortunately, that hasn't been the case. I have been able to take a vacation. We work holidays, we work weekends, we work Christmas Eve, we work Christmas morning, and we are proud to work at Delta, and we choose to work there. But the flexibility that the company allows us under the current work policies that we have is priceless to us. And by changing our work rules, the ability to take care of our families would be greatly diminished. I personally want to thank Bill for, actually as a senior vice president, listening to his employees and acting for us and facilitating our journey along the path till we get till we're here today, which is very important. My hope is that you too will listen, and my prayer is that you will hear us and know that by changing our work rules, you will take away our ability to care for our families. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you, Ms. Deutsch, and very sorry about your husband.
Thank you.
And my sense is he's probably pretty lucky to have you.
Thank you.
Fighting for him, working with him. Mr. Lynch, you have some more.
Thank you, Brenda. Mr. Chair and Committee, I'd like to introduce you to Doug Ratke, who is a ramp agent at the Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Committee. My name is Doug Ratke.
Thank you, Mr. Ratke. Welcome.
Thank you. I have been on Delta with previous Northwest and Delta now for 20 years, and I have used this trade system just about all my life. It really works well for me. For my instance, I am from small town west here, Broughton, Minnesota. It's an hour west of the Twin Cities. It's very important to me to have this ability to travel because I have children. I have two young girls, and my wife works also, and I am able to trade my shifts away so I can be home Monday and Tuesdays. I can be home Saturday, Sunday, Mondays, and Tuesdays, and she can work Mondays and Tuesdays, and then she'll be home the rest of the week, and it helps so much in daycare. We had so much help that way, and the ability to drive back and forth, like I said, with the prices of fuel and the ability to trade like that, it's just a privilege to have the ability to do that. Because I've done it some days where I've only worked 2 days a week down here, and then I'll work the whole next week and do more hours that way. And it's just such a benefit. I mean, it's one of the reasons I really would never want to leave my job. I mean, it's been that's one of the best benefits. And as Brenda said before, too, with the holidays. And there's a lot of people with a lot of junior people, too, that when they get hired on there, they are set days. They will not see a Saturday or Sunday off without trading a day. I mean, they're not going to see it for 4 or 5 years. I mean, if they couldn't trade, have the ability, which would be very hard on their life, you know, and personal and family. So it's a benefit that's very appreciative. And it's all up to us. The company has nothing, you know, they do not force us to do anything like that. They give us the ability to do that, and they are very lenient with us, and they really give us a great opportunity. So I appreciate if you guys understand it and see what you know. So,
thank you, Mr. Radke. Appreciate your testimony
Thanks.
Today.
Thank you, Doug.
Mr.
And
Lynch.
Finally, Mr. Chairman and committee, I'd like to introduce you to Cerise Koga-O'Neill, who works as a reservation agent here in Minneapolis-St. Paul.
Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, committee members, good morning. My name is Cerise Koga-O'Neill, and I am a 23-year employee of Northwest and Delta Airlines. Many years ago, when I was first interviewed for an airline position, I was asked if I was willing to work nights, weekends, and holidays. I understood this to mean I would need to be flexible if I wanted a career with an airline. At first, this took some getting used to, but it soon became one of the most coveted benefits of my position and remains so today. Initially, I used workplace flexibility for travel opportunities since we flew standby waiting for an available airplane seat. Later, I used this flexibility as my life transitioned for more family focus. It allowed me to trade hours with others, so I was able to attend school, music, scouting, sports, and church functions with my son. Then my father suffered a stroke. My mother developed breast cancer. Without flexible scheduling, providing care for them and transportation to and from doctor's appointments would not have been possible. Lately, the flexibility has been a salary supplement to pay bills during this economic downturn. It has also permitted me the opportunity to maintain some balance in my life by doing volunteer work and pursuing passions outside of the office. Employees are at various stages in their lives. The flexibility to pick up, give away, and trade hours is mutually beneficial to the employees and Delta Airlines as well. Please vote to allow the continuation of this benefit and preserve workplace flexibility. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Mr. Lynch or Senator Daley, any remarks kind of in conclusion here? I think you're doing pretty well.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. One thing that I do want to stress and just make sure that you're very well aware of this is a flexibility that has been provided these employees in the past because they were working under a contract that allowed them to do that. Since they have recently voted to be non-contract, that flexibility will be going away, and all we are requesting here is the continuation of that flexibility by exempting these employees under the Minnesota Fair Labor Standards Act, as 19 other employee groups are currently exempted. Thank you.
And I have Senator Peterson with a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a little off topic, but Mr. Lynch, I couldn't let you leave today without making sure you know we miss you in St. Cloud. And if there's any scenario that you guys see that would ever bring you back to that region of the state, I wanted to make sure you know the elected officials both locally and on the state level are ready to work with you to try and make that happen. So thanks for coming down.
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, duly noted. It's always nice to be missed. Yeah. Thank you.
Mr. Lynch, while we have you, can you give a brief, we're deep into the first quarter of 2011. How's business? How's the airline doing? How does it compare to last year? We spend most of our time here talking about jobs and economic growth. So any perspective you could add to what this committee will be working on the next couple months?
Sure. Mr. Chair.
Mr. Lynch.
Committee members, it's something that could take me an hour or two, but I'm going to try to keep this to a few minutes. We just completed a very successful 2010 year, both from an operational and a financial perspective. But I think overarching all of that is that we have successfully now integrated two very large air carriers, two very complex air carriers, and we have maintained our commitment to the state of Minnesota. We're very involved from a leadership, from a financial support, from a volunteer basis, very involved in the community. We just recently reported at the end of January that our year-end employment numbers in the state of Minnesota were somewhere near 12,700. I don't know the exact number, which is well above the commitment that we've made to the state. We maintain the flying levels that we've committed out of this hub in Minneapolis-St. Paul. So Delta is very committed and has demonstrated its commitment to this community. Of course, fuel has us concerned, as it probably does everyone, since we can't avoid fuel consumption during our day. We are taking the appropriate measures, very strategic measures, to manage through the current fuel crisis. We're very comfortable with where we stand on that. We think we have very solid plans, and none of those plans at this time address any impact on our employee base here in the state of Minnesota. So it's going to be a challenging 2011 if we don't see some change in the cost of fuel. We've done some work to hedge and protect ourselves against fuel volatility, but we aren't completely protected by it. So we're going to have to take very strategic, very calculated, but I would say very deliberate measures to manage through this. And I'm comfortable that we're in a position relative to our competitive set to manage through this better than anybody.
Thank you, Mr. Lynch. Senator Daley, do you have any more remarks on behalf of your bill or on behalf of the good folks that you brought forward today?
Mr. Chair, I would just like to thank all of the Delta employees for taking time out of their busy lives to come down here to share with us the importance of this measure. And members, I would urge your support for this bill.
And I will thank you, Senator Daley. I do need to ask if there's anyone else in the room who wishes to testify on Senate File 488. Yes, sir.
I don't know if this is regarding, but if I was a...
You gotta go.
Do you want to go to the table, sir?
And the microphone.
Just,
my name is Peter Hanson Reyes. When I was at high school.
Sir, you're gonna without you having you at the microphone, we can't get your information on tape.
My name is Peter Hanson Race. I attained my pilot's license when I was a junior in high school at Purdue. Anyway, yes, I flew Northwest Airlines many places. I understand that Indiana privatizes quite a few airports. Wouldn't it be nice if Delta purchased Lindbergh Airport for us and took it off the tax roll and made it a profit-making company paying taxes to the state of Minnesota? Thank you.
Thank you, sir. You've gone a little beyond the scope of this bill, but I think that'll be...
I also think the new Viking State. Companies for that.
So. Now he's really gone beyond the scope of this bill. Senator Daley, sounds like he has an amendment for you. Well, I want to thank Senator Daley. I want to thank the employees and the management of Delta. We need a strong hometown airline. That is what you guys are. That is what we need you to be. We want to be helpful. So if there's more beyond Senate File 488 that we can do to be helpful, to work with you, to partner with you, please let us know. Senator Daley moves that Senate File 488 be recommended to pass and move to general orders on the Senate floor. So that motion. All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed nay. The bill is passed. Thank you very much, Senator Daley.
Thank you.
All right.
Chief, come home, Bill Bailey.
Got my vote.
For the record, members, I don't
said you got my vote.
Thank you. Yeah, Bill, it's
open.
I had to vote. Are you crazy? He was praising the co-authors.
I hope you agree with that.
Big deal, I guess.
Absolutely.
got to yak a little bit on this. I was around by the merger you worked on.
Oh. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Everybody was so concerned, but they fulfilled every promise they made. Oh. Do you want to make a comment on that?
I mean, they could.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
It's still made 12,400 people.
Yeah, that's a huge.
Yeah, all the other things.
We'll keep it quick.
I've been through a lot. Members, we now have Senator Crife with Senate File 634. As I understand it, this is a Department of Labor and Industry bill. Senator Crife, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. Senate File 634 is basically a bill relating to labor and industry. It's a general housekeeping bill and relates to duties with the Department of Labor and Industry. What I want to do is I would like to turn this over to some testifiers, Mr. John Rakowski and Pat Olson, to help explain this bill to you.
Mr. Rakowski, welcome back to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, this is indeed a hard act to follow after that last bill, but I'll explain this. I've also, Pat Olson here is our staff attorney who helped me draft a lot of these provisions, and if I may just take a few seconds. Members of the committee, I don't believe you've had a department quote housekeeping bill in front of you at this point, but typically every agency every year kind of scrubs its statutes based on the changes they've made from the last legislative session. And to be quite candor, we don't always get it right. And so this is our version of a reviser bill.
Mr. Rakowski, is this one right?
For this year, sir.
Thank you.
If you'd like me to go through the sections, I'd be happy to do so. And if you have any questions that particular detail, our attorney, Pat Olson, can help.
Why don't you just go through some highlights, Senator Mr. Rakowski.
Looking at the bill, Section 1 deals with the independent contractor statute, 181.723. This was a statute created 4 years ago to allow for independent contractors to get an exemption certificate. What we have found over the last ensuing years is that a licensed residential contractors double up, if you will, their license, both their residential building contractor license is doubled up with the ICEC certificate. And what this section does is take that apart for accounting purposes because it's been a real for our people who process these applications. The Second Amendment adds a sentence that permits a final penalty to be filed as a judgment without notice or additional hearings. And this is consistent with other law
statute.
Moving on to Section 2. This is a section that deals with a law that we passed, I believe, in 08. Senator Metzen was aware of the Safe Building Act, as was Senator Michelle. This clarifies our ability to assess.
Mr. Rakowski, pull that microphone a little closer to you. You're fading in and out a little bit.
This happened yesterday, too, with the commissioner. Is that better, sir?
That is.
All right. Thank you. Section 2 deals with the Safe Patient Handling Act, and it allows the department to assess a penalty. It essentially is clarifying language. Section 3 deals with the notification of changes in the state building code, and it changes the date that triggers the 180-day count for comments from the public.
If I may jump in, I'm Pat Olson. I'm an attorney with the Department
Ms.
of Labor and Industry.
Thank you for rescuing him.
Actually, rules that are adopted or amended related to the state building code have a what we call a 180-day delay for the effective date. That delay is currently triggered by the submission or the filing of those rules with the Secretary of State's office. That's a very difficult day for the public and interested parties to find out about. And the agency is not responsible for making that filing. So often we don't even know what date it is until after the fact. Changing this date allows to the publication of the notice of adoption is an easier date for people to figure out when is it that these rules become effective, and is important to us for that reason. We want that date to be easily discernible, easy to calculate, and this change will help us to do that.
Thank you, Ms. Olson.
Thank you.
Thank you. And last sections of the bill, sections 4 and 5, deal with our contract recovery fund. Commissioner Peterson discussed that in some detail yesterday. This will allow and clarifies the costs that are excluded from the owner's direct out-of-pocket loss. The second change makes it clear that the department or an owner can appeal the decision to an administrative law judge. Would you like to amplify that?
Yes. It's actually the decision made by the administrative law judge. This clarifies that the department or what is essentially the applicant to the recovery fund can appeal that decision.
And that's all we have for you. I will also point out that if you refer back to Section 1, I was talking to the head of that department, Charlie Durenberger, who runs the investigative unit for the independent contractors. And because we are separating those two licenses by making them separate, there is a minor fiscal impact, and I would recommend that this bill be held over for possible inclusion in the omnibus budget bill.
Ms. Doyle, did you have a comment?
No, Mr. Chair and members. We just got the fiscal note today, and I believe that it was a zero impact. So
okay.
I'm not.
Okay. Senator Kreif, do you have more information for the committee or more that you want to highlight for us regarding Senate File 634?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, it was just mentioned that there was zero fiscal impact. I believe that's a that's significant. I also didn't thank the co-sponsors, Senator Peterson and Senator Kielash, on this, and I appreciate their involvement in this as well, this cleanup bill. And what I'd like to do is also see this move forward to the omnibus bill to be laid over.
All right. So we will hold on to this bill then, Senator Kreif and Mr. Rakowski, as we develop a larger department bill. Members, any more discussion on this matter? Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to speak to Senate File 634? Then, without objection, Senate File 634 will be laid over.
Thank you.
Members, next up is Senate File 579. I see Mr. Senator Gazelka has just joined us. Senator Gazelka, I know you're running. If you want to catch your breath, take a minute.
Talk about perfect timing.
Senator Gazelka, welcome to the committee, and you have Senate File 579. And members, it is also my intent to not take any votes on this bill today. We do have a list of folks who want to testify, so let's make sure we get that on the record. Senator Gazelka.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senate File Files 579, I would consider a consumer-friendly bill. I think it's a common-sense bill. This would repeal legislation enacted in 2007 that banned a specific plumbing product, and I think you all have in your packet a picture of that product, the air admittance valve. It's very cost-effective. It's an environmentally friendly fixture designed to ventilate drainage and waste systems. They're used worldwide since the 70s, and they are allowed in 39 states. The ban was enacted via an amendment to a comprehensive building code bill without advance notice or any substantive hearing or legislative inquiry into the safety or effectiveness of this valve. Really, this should have been a plumbing board issue, in my opinion, not a legislative issue. Senate File 579 repeals the ban. That's simply what it does. I have testifiers here about that, but as you want us to proceed.
All right. Thank you, Senator Gazelka. I have first on my list, and I'm going to get the pronunciation wrong. Jack, is it Bushell?
Jack Buchel, Mr. Chairman.
Buchel. All right, that's close. I can figure that one out. So, Mr. Buchel, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman?
I think I also recognize Senator Thrain. Do you want to go first?
Well, thank you for the promotion, Senator Michelle.
Yeah, go ahead, Mr. Thrain.
Jack and I sort of decided we might do this as a team, and if we could proceed in that way, we'd appreciate it.
That'd be fine. Mr. Thrain.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Peter Thrain from Leonard Street and Dynard, and I represent IPS Systems, which is the which is a manufacturer of the air admittance valve, or the AEV. With me today is Mr. Jack Buchel. Mr. Buchel is the president of Studer, which is the subsidiary of IPS that actually manufactures the valve. Mr. Buchel is here to help me answer any questions on what can be a technical plumbing project. This legislation repeals legislation that was enacted in 2007, which prohibited the State Plumbing Board from considering whether to amend the plumbing code to allow the air admittance valve. Minnesota is the only state in the country that has enacted legislation prohibiting the air admittance valve. So what is an air admittance valve? Well, here is the actual version that's installed. You have a clear version that's being passed around for your view. It is it's a plumbing device. It's cost-effective and environmentally friendly, and it's used as an alternative to open-stack venting and plumbing installations. It's installed between the P-trap under your sink and the exit, and is designed to maintain consistent air pressure between both areas so that water doesn't back through the P-trap, causing sewer gas to be released into the home. You will see sometimes it's not a mechanical device, and if you look at it, there's a membrane. There's no mechanical device. It's sometimes you'll hear there's a similar device that you hear called a cheater valve that has a spring. This is not that. This is something entirely different. An AAV costs a lot less than the alternative, again, which is to cut holes through the roof and create open-stack venting. Saving money in construction has a whole range of benefits, not the least of which is more affordable housing. You have a color brochure in your package, which sort of goes through the details and shows some pictures of it. And if you have any detailed questions, Mr. Buchel is an expert in this area, and he'd be happy to answer any of those questions. Again, as Senator Gazelta mentioned, the AAV is authorized in 39 states as an option, an alternative to open-stack venting. Millions have been installed across the United States and across the world. To the best of our knowledge, there has been no reported adverse health effect associated with the AAV. We have seen a promotional piece opposing this, which quotes an administrative law judge as finding that the benefits are minimal and do not outweigh the potential health effects. I think this might have been distributed. The actual court ruling, however, is that, again, consistent with our experiences, there is no evidence in the record that AAVs are associated with any health or explosion risks at all. And, in fact, the ALJ goes on to say, the record as a whole supports the conclusion that AAVs that are properly tested to the AASE standards function in a manner that is as safe and effective as the traditional method of open-stack venting. So, Mr. Chairman, we have no experience with any adverse health effects. That has been in the record of a previous administrative hearing. And all we're asking is that this legislative prohibition be repealed, and so that the plumbing board, the agency charged by this legislature with establishing the plumbing code, can evaluate and consider the merits of the device and determine whether to add it to the plumbing code. In fact, in 2008, the State Plumbing Board passed a resolution asking this legislature to repeal the prohibition so they could take action on the device. A copy of that communication is in your file. Thank you. Mr. Buchel and I would be happy to answer, and probably more Mr. Buchel than me, happy any answers that you have on the operation of the device or the effect of this legislation. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Thrain. Members, any questions for let me just ask this at the outset. So, Senator Gazelka or Mr. Thrain, do you have any more testimony for what would be the proponents of this bill? Or should we just focus on you three?
This is the proponent team here, sir.
Okay. Members of the committee, any questions at this stage? We have three or four names for folks who want to testify on the other side, so I want to make sure we have time for them. If no questions at this point, then let me ask, Senator Gazelka, is there anything else you want to add before we to bring up the other side.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Gazelka.
I have a hard time pronouncing your name, but he'd like to make a comment or two if he may.
Mr. Buchel.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. As Mr. Train mentioned, one of the benefits of the product is that it reduces the cost of construction, which provides for more affordable housing. I think that's an important issue for every state to consider, to provide citizens more affordable housing. But there are two other benefits I'd just like to mention, although there are many more versus open pipe venting. One is that it reduces roof penetrations. Roof penetrations require flashings around the vent pipes. If you ask any builder if he can reduce roof penetrations, he is all in favor of that, because what happens is that those flashings eventually leak, allowing water to enter the building frame. When water enters the building frame, you not only get water damage, but you get the creation of mold. And mold in buildings is a huge health problem throughout this country. The other benefit is it's environmentally friendly in that it reduces pollution of the outdoor air as well as indoor air from sewer gas, especially in commercial buildings, schools, hospitals, where you have rooftop air handlers for the air conditioning system, ventilation system. And you also have, with open pipe venting, the open pipes are terminating on the roofs of these buildings. And under certain wind shear conditions, these are generally parapeted roofs, flat roofs, sewer gas is coming out and being drawn into the air handling units and polluting the indoor air quality, causing a lot of health problems. The problem is being solved in existing buildings by going up on the roof and installing air admittance valves on the open pipe vents. But if the building had been done from the beginning with air admittance valves, you wouldn't have that problem. So those are two very important benefits, I believe, that should be considered by this committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Buchel. And Mr. Thrain, before you leave, one question. If we were to pass this language, would the plumbing board have to do any rule changes? Would there be some kind of action necessary by the plumbing board in response or in reaction to what we do?
Mr. Chairman, no. The plumbing board is the agency charged for code setting for the plumbing code, and repealing the ban then simply puts this in the position of the plumbing board considering whether to take action administratively to amend the code to allow the air admits valve.
So they would have to.
So they would have to.
Well, the plumbing board would need to take action, yes.
Yes.
I think the answer was yes. Do you want to say
should
it again,
try that again?
Mr. Thrain?
All right. Mr. Chairman, yes, if the ban is repealed, the plumbing board has to take affirmative action to authorize the AAV as a part of the plumbing code.
Thank you, Mr. Thrain. Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair and members, our question for the panel. It looks like in all these installations here, if one of these valves fails in my home, do I just screw that off and put a new one on and it's working again? Is that an accurate statement?
Mr. Chairman and Senator, yes, that's correct. It would be changed out by a plumbing contractor. You simply unscrew the valve that has failed or allegedly failed, and you screw another one in. That's a simple fix, and it's an easy operation.
Senator Peterson.
To follow up there, do I need a plumbing contractor to do this? I'm thinking of my water filters for my refrigerator. I buy six of them at a time, and when one runs out, I replace it. Do I buy two of these and just keep one on the shelf, and if it fails, I take one off and put a new one on?
You can, but it's through the chair, Senator. You can, of course, but it's really not necessary. These valves generally last the lifetime of the plumbing system in a house. The ASSE standards, which are performance standards by the American Society of Sanitary Engineering, they do during their performance testing an endurance test, and the valves are cycled 500,000 times. It takes 4 weeks to do that test, and that's equivalent to 30 years of lifetime use of the product.
Thank you.
So,
all right, then let me ask, and if Hang on, Senator Howe. Let me ask. I've got at least four names, and so maybe you can start to come up together. I know there's only three seats, so you can fight over the fourth. But we'll give everyone time. I have Gary Thiedon and Luke Stemmer, Carl Crimmins, and Luke Westman.
Two at a time?
Two Lukes. Okay. Sure. Let's start with that. And I just want to make sure they're comfortable. I don't know if this testimony has been worked out in advance. Welcome to the committee. And, yeah, if you could just state your name. Who wants to lead
Thank
off
you.
Here?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Carl Crimmins. I'm the president of the Minnesota Pipe Trades Association.
Thank you, Mr. Crimmins.
Just to give you some bookkeeping or housekeeping, Gary Thiedon is not available today to testify.
Okay,
so
thank
he
you
won't be here.
So we're down to three.
We're down to three, sir. Senators, Mr. Chairman and Senators, I'm here to speak in opposition of the Senate File 579. Further, some of the earlier comments about when the prohibition went into place, it wasn't heard. This prohibition was in committee. It was in several committees in the House. It was in the Senate committee here, the Jobs Committee. Senator Metzen's committee was heard there. It was argued on the floor, both House and Senate, when the prohibition was put in place. So this prohibition was aired throughout the Capitol.
And Mr. Crimmins, what year was that?
07.
2007. Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Mechanical device, I heard that it's not a mechanical device, but the district court, Judge Mott, said that this device meets the dictionary definition of mechanical devices, and thus it is a mechanical device. And roof flashings, before I go on to roof flashings, Mr. Chairman, I want to say that this device was heard in four plumbing advisory council committees and rejected four times. It's been in front of an administrative law judge twice and was failed twice to pass. So this device has been properly vetted, and it went in front of the district county, Ramsey District County Court, and they upheld the prohibition. It went to the Minnesota Court of Appeals, and they upheld the prohibition. They appealed to the Supreme Court of Minnesota, and they denied to even hear the case. So this prohibition has been talked about, vetted, dissected any which way you want to go. The Department of Health, when they had to go to the administrative law judge, in their rebuttal to the judge stated there is no evidence that this device saves any money on new construction and maybe in remodeling, but it would depend on each individual remodeling project. And the Department of Health, their last comment was, any perceived advantage from the use of such devices as AAVs is more than outweighed by the potential health risks from sewer gas that may enter homes and businesses.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question from Senator Nelson. I don't mean to cut you off in mid-sentence, but I think it was to what you're just stating.
Thank you, Chairman Michelle. Mr. Crimmins, I'm just wondering, can you help me? I have two questions, really. Help me understand what's the significance about whether or not this is a mechanical device. I'm not sure why that's significant to the debate. And then the second question is, I'm trying to understand why it was a legislative issue. And I'm just wondering, why would you not be taking these arguments to the Board of Plumbing? I mean, why wouldn't we have the Board of Plumbing make this type of decision rather than the legislature?
Mr. Crimmins.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, to your first question about mechanical devices, the definition of mechanical devices leads the product to failure. If it's not mechanical, it would probably never fail, where the traditional open pipe venting systems have no moving parts. The pipes through the roof, air circulates back and forth. There are no moving parts. If you have a device with moving parts, there is subject to failure. So that's the reason for mechanical.
In the places where these have been used, do they have some sort of failure rate? I mean, have they failed, or do we know what the rate is of failure?
Mr. Crimmins.
Mr. Chairman and Senator, in Colorado, they did a study. Air admittance valves did a study at an apartment complex in 98 with the state of Colorado. In 99, the state of Colorado denied the use of AAVs in the state after the study was done jointly. In Wisconsin, to bring us up to date, in 2009, there's a 39% failure rate on this product. The state of Wisconsin has been tracking air admittance valves. They have a 39% failure rate in the state of Wisconsin. So there is significant failure rate.
So then I guess that goes – thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess that goes into my last question, which is why would not the Board of Plumbing then be the place to look at this and make these type of decisions based upon the information that you've given us or that the other testifiers have given us?
Mr. Crimmins.
Mr. Chairman, Senator, as I stated earlier, this device was in front of the Plumbing Advisory Council four times. When that was not satisfactory to the manufacturer, they decided to go in front of an ALJ. The administrative law judge ruled with the Department of Health that these valves were not to be used in the state of Minnesota. Then the commissioner left. There was a new commissioner appointed. The manufacturer had a private meeting in violation, we think, of the Open Meeting Act with the new commissioner of health. After that meeting, she issued a temporary approval to the state of Minnesota, informing the Plumbing Advisory Council in writing that there's going to be a temporary approval of this device. So then the Minnesota Pipe Trades had to go in front and bring it to another ALJ. That judge ruled that that was an unpromulgated rule and it was not enforceable, and they had to withdraw it. So that's the reason we think that this device has been vetted enough, and it just seems like we never get to any resolution here, and that's the reason we hadn't gone in front of the plumbing board. That's the reason we went to put it into statute. We equate this device, as I equate this device, to be equal to the prohibition that the statute, that the legislature put on lead in plumbing solder. Because the high content of lead in plumbing solder was a risk to the health of the citizens, this legislature passed a prohibition on high lead content solder. And we think this device is in that same category. It's a risk to the citizens of the state, and that the legislature should have weighed in on this after we've tried the process, and the process didn't seem to work.
One follow-up. Thank you for your patience. So just to get to the issue, then are you afraid that the Board of Plumbing would approve this? I mean, I'm just not sure why you don't want them to weigh in on this.
No, I don't. I don't speak for the Board of Plumbing. I just thought that since it's been vetted enough, that it seems to be a waste of time and money to have to do this again and again and again.
Thank you.
Mr. Crimmins, these questions may have stopped you from completing your testimony, so is there more that you want to add?
Yes, sir. Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Please.
Senators. Then, after the second administrative law judge decision banning air admittance valves in the state of Minnesota, the Department of Labor had as a new commissioner, Steve Swigum. They hired an independent third party to test the product. They paid $25,000 to have this product tested. And some of the comments are, due to the nature and installation of an AAV, even when properly installed, the opening of the valve allows direct access to the occupiable areas of the building from the sewer system, possibly subjecting these areas to infestation of insects and small amounts of sewer gas. AAVs do not normally exhibit signs of malfunction. Slight leaks in the seal or a failure to the diaphragm may go unnoticed, allowing significant amounts of gas buildup. And sewer gas contains hepatitis, salmonella, E. coli, polio, methane. These gases are known as respiratory irritants. And these gases are also known to cause pulmonary edema and other respiratory problems. And it says here that a properly engineered vent waste system can be expected to last the life of the building. AAVs are a mechanical device, leaving the valve to malfunction long before the expected end of the life of the balance of the plumbing system. Then the judge, again, I read to you from the district court hearing. I don't want to overburden you on that. It's just he did say it was a mechanical device. He does state in here that The risks are not generally associated with traditional open vent piping systems. These risks are genuine and relevant to the classification distinguishing AAVs from traditional plumbing methods and thus to the AAV prohibition. AAVs increase the number of potential leakage points in a building, utilizing them as opposed to open pipe venting. And the, like I say, the Minnesota Court of Appeals confirmed the district court findings, and the Supreme Court refused to hear the case. And at that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for questions.
I saw Senator Gazelka raise his finger.
Oh, when you're ready.
I want to make sure we get all the testimony, but to the point of something that Mr. Crimmins brought up, Senator Gazelka?
Yeah, just quickly, Mr. Chair. I mean, there's 39 states that presently allow this, and that we know of, there's no complaints to any government agency as far as health issues for the individual. And I would simply say if you smell sewer gas, you probably call a plumber, wherever you would smell that. But and then just one second point. I think it's true that the courts have upheld the legislation that we or legislators did in the past, but the question is, was that the right legislation? Should have that not been a plumbing board issue?
Okay, I have Mr. Crimmins, are you going to respond to Senator Gazelka?
I was going to bring up something from the state of Louisiana.
Well, while you're looking through your, let me make sure I get. Is it Mr. Westman?
Yes.
Okay. Let me ask for your testimony, and then we'll go back to Mr. Crimmins. He's as he's looking through his files there. Mr. Westman, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee and senators. My name is Luther Westman. I'm president of the state Minnesota PHCC, and I represent the state and the Metro Duluth PHCC and Virginia PHCC here.
Mr. Westman, you're going to have to spell out that acronym, PHCC.
Plumbing, Heating, and Cooling Contractors Association.
Yeah. Thank you.
Okay. We feel that this device is more of a hindrance than an advantage to our association. The device has failed in Minnesota. It does emit, in a lot of cases, small amounts of gas, which may not be noticeable because they're odorless. In some cases, they are a lot of distinctive odors. I personally have had to go and change them out in numerous houses where the people have called and they've had a lot of odor in their houses. Our properties, and I'm supporting Carl and Mr. Crimmins here and his. So that's, I guess, what I have to say.
Okay. Well, we have a new face. You were not supposed to be here, Mr. Thaden. Let me just ask. I have one more name down here. I have Mr. Stemmer. Is she here? No, but.
No. Remy Stone?
No, Stemmer. I have Stemmer. Luke Stemmer. But, okay, so I'll give it to you, Mr. Crimmins, as to how you want to complete your testimony, and then if you want to – you were kind of pinch-hitting for Mr. Thaden, but we'll certainly be happy to hear from him this morning.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, in response to the senator's comments, in Louisiana, after Katrina – they brought a lot of trailers in, and here's a letter from the chief state sanitary engineer, Douglas Vincent. The reason for the HUD allows the use of mechanical air admittance valves on plumbing vent pipes inside the mobile manufactured homes and travel trailers. Over time, it has been this office's experience that such mechanical devices eventually fail, allowing sewer gas to enter the living quarters. Besides receiving complaints of the odor, sewer gas can contain viruses and other potentially harmful substances to the occupants of the mobile manufactured home travel trailers. So there are listed documents where these devices have failed and have caused problems for the citizens in their states, Mr. Chairman. Did you want to have Mr. Thaden?
Sure. Mr. Thaden, you're indicating a short amount of testimony, which would be just fine.
Members of the committee, my name is Gary Thaden. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Minnesota Mechanical Contractors Association, including plumbing, heating, and cooling contractors, much like Luke, although we represent different contractors. I apologize with Senator Lilly. I was at the Work Comp Advisory Council meeting, and we got a bill. So I agree with Carl.
Mr. Crimmins.
Mr. Chairman, we had one more gentleman that wanted to testify.
Please.
Phil Raines.
Mr. Raines, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record.
My name is Phil Raines. I'm Vice President at Associated Builders and Contractors of Minnesota. I'll keep things short. This is kind of a rare situation where you've seen pretty much the three biggest groups that represent heating and cooling here. We've looked at the air admittance valves, both union, non-union. We all pretty much agree. The issue has been vetted through the plumbing board four times. There have been lawsuits over this issue. I'm not a big fan of the legislature doing code issues in the legislature. I generally like to see those done in the expertise area, such as the plumbing board. This issue has been vetted many, many times before. My contractors have looked at it. They work across state lines. They've worked with them in Wisconsin. They've seen them fail. They universally said to me, this is poor plumbing. The way to do it properly is to vent it through the roof. Then you've got an open pipe that simply doesn't fail until that pipe falls apart. And when it's PVC, it lasts a very long time. These devices will fail. They will put swamp gas back into the house, which creates mold, all sorts of disease issues. So we would, like I said, I'm not a big fan of the legislature weighing in on these issues because it is something we need the plumbing council to directly take up most of the time. This is the status quo, and we're very happy with the status quo. We're not interested in having these devices available in the state.
Senator DeCray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to direct this question to Mr. Westman. You're a plumber?
Yes.
In your years of being a plumber here in Minnesota, have you responded to homes that have had the pipe going through the roof that have had smelled sewer gas?
I guess I have to say yes to that because in the early days when the piping was all steel, they would the threaded connections would rot off and you would get sewer gas in the house and then you'd have to go in and repair it. Today, with the plastic pipes used for the waste and vents, no, I've not because of that problem.
Senator DeCray.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've lived in an old home that has had the steel, which did rust off, and I had to replace. And I've lived in a little newer home with the PVC, which I've had. We have snow in Minnesota.
Yeah.
And I have had it plugged with snow. And I've gotten sewer gas in my home because of that. Now, it's something that's fixable. You know, in my case, I got on the roof and I cleaned the snow off. But we didn't die from it. We could smell the sewer gas, so we knew there was a problem. I for one, would agree with the last testifier that I'm not in favor of the legislature legislating this item. I think that it should go before the experts and have some proper testing done. So for me, I've been around plumbing. I'm not a plumber, but I've been around it a lot. I am a resort owner, and for me, life happens, and you, from time to time, we get sewer gas in our homes, and it's not from this item. It can happen.
Yeah, it's true.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else, Senator Torres-Ray? I was just going to ask you. I will give you the floor, so to speak. But I do want to just see: is there anyone else here today that wants to testify on behalf of or against this bill, Senate File 579? Okay, Senator Torres-Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to apologize. I was with constituents outside, but I am curious about the testimony that was heard from before the industry, before the gentlemen that are here, Did you have any people in the industry, Senator Gazelka, that actually liked this product, or it was just company people representing this company? Are any people who work in the field that actually want this product in the market?
Senator Gazelka, do you want to ask some folks to join you at the table again to answer that question, or how?
It was Mr. Chair and Senator Torres Ray. It was the owner of the company and another testifier, not in the field. I think that's
two letters in their packets from other folks in the industry.
Okay, thank you. You remind me, Mr. Chair, Senator Torres Ray, that there are letters in your packet from people in the industry.
Okay, Senator, I would like to see those letters. Thank you. I don't need to hear a testimony. I was just wondering who was testifying in favor of your bill.
Senator Tomasoni, and then I have Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, I too walked in late, but I've been in the middle of this for a number of years now, and I think the fact that this issue has been before the Minnesota Plumbing Advisory Council four different times. The independent study by the state of Minnesota in 2007 determined the device to be fragile. The administrative law judge in 2002 ruled against the installation of AAVs. In 2009, a district court upheld the legislative ban. And then in 2010, the Court of Appeals also agreed with the district court by upholding the legislative ban. And then the Supreme Court declined to hear the case. Makes me think that we're wasting our time by changing the law again, because I got a funny feeling we're going to be ending up back in court. And I think there's some pretty clear court case to say that this law should just be upheld and be left alone. And so I would be against Senator Gazelka's bill, just because of the fact there's so much precedent here against this particular device that I think we should just leave the law in place.
Senator Peterson, and then Senator Howe. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm not sure, Senator Gazelka, who's the best person to answer this question, but I think back when owners, when they're building an apartment building or commercial building or even a house for that matter, when that project closes, usually they get a stack of information, and in that information is a maintenance schedule for things. I think in my own house, I mean, I changed my furnace filter. I mentioned the water filters. I put softener salt in my softener. I mean, these buildings have maintenance schedules that we need to follow if you're going to choose to own a home or choose to manage a property. Why is this something that can be added to that type of maintenance schedule? I mean, it seems like a fairly simple device, and I'm struggling to understand the opposition. I mean, I would do this myself. If I smelled sewer gas, I would, like I said, I'd go to my shelf, grab the spare that I bought, I'd screw off the one that's failing and put on the one that's new, and I think it'd be over with. I mean, is this something that if they put these in buildings, I want to know, I guess, are they part of the maintenance schedule, or how is that handled?
Mr. Chairman and Senator.
Mr. Bushell.
May I address that?
Please.
Question, yes. There's no maintenance required during the lifetime of the system. If the valve fails, you simply put a new one in. So there's no maintenance requirement.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Howe.
Mr. Chair, I'm just wanted to make a comment here. I heard testimony that it was, it should be in the realm of the experts. And the legislation just repeals this prohibition, which would put it back in the hands of the experts. And I don't know how we would get sued by not taking a position on it, but putting it back into the realm of the experts. But what the statute does currently is it prevents any future technology on it. I mean, this may not be what the board approves, but there may be some new technology that comes out, and yet Minnesota is going to be behind the eight ball on it because we've prevented some new technology for air admittance valves. And I would say that, you know, we heard testimony about back in 1998. Well, a lot of things have changed in 10 or 12 years, and I think things will continue to change. And I'm not advocating for these or against them. I think when you're doing new construction, there might not be much of a cost savings because the walls are open and you can drill the holes and you can run the pipes and I used to work in the construction trade. So, but I would think with remodeling, if there's new technology, there can be some significant costs if you want to put a bathroom in somewhere where there's not access to a venting pipe. So I just think that it should go to the experts, and it shouldn't be the legislative body that prevents new technology from either working or not. And I think the bill just puts it back in that case rather than just a straight prohibition of any kind of new technology when it comes to plumbing or anybody else.
Other questions, comments from members? Senator Torres Ray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just one final question to Senator Gazalka. As I read these letters, one of them said they are a manufacturer. The other one is a mechanical company. To your knowledge, are these companies working in the manufacturing of this product?
Senator Torres Ray, I'm going to let them answer that. My goal here was to open up the door to a level playing field, and 39 states already use this system, and I wanted to let the plumbing board make the decision, not the legislature, but they can better answer that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I perfectly understand your position, Senator. I just want to clarify, I don't want to vote on a bill that actually is brought to our attention by a company about really an item that benefits a company. I don't think that we should be doing that. I don't want to be doing that. I don't want to speak for you. I just want to hear from you that this company is actually not associated with the companies. I want to hear from the people who actually use this product. We heard opposition about it. I'm not very familiar with this industry whatsoever. But when a company brings this to my attention and say, okay, we need this product in Minnesota, and then we bring people that are associated with the company to say, this is a good product, I have a problem voting for it. Mm-hmm. Just a clarification. That's my position.
Mr. Bushell, did you want to react?
Yes. Mr. Chairman and Senate, you mentioned something about manufacturing. The valves are manufactured by a company that's a very qualified company in Connecticut that is an ISO standard certified company. They're an injection molding company, and they are very sophisticated. And these products are manufactured under very stringent conditions of quality control as well as manufacturing. The letters that you have in your file are letters from companies that had used the product when it was approved for a year by the Minnesota Department of Health. That was during 2005. And I can state here today that there are thousands of valves installed in the state of Minnesota during that period. And we have had no report of failures of one valve. So they have been field tested here in Minnesota during the year they were approved by the health department. They are operating successfully even today.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think my question was the association. I understand the manufacturing. I just want to know if I wanted to hear from people who are using, you know, this product and kind of from their professional perspective how this works. And we heard some people who are opposed to this. So you brought some letters of people who believe that this is a good product, and I wanted to know about kind of the association that these companies may have with your company in terms of manufacturing.
Mr. Bushell.
Mr. Chairman and Madam Senator. There's no association between those companies and our company, simply that they found that they wanted to use this product.
Thank you.
And it benefited their business.
Thank you. That's
you're welcome.
Senator Gazelka, any final words? We will be laying this bill over for further consideration. We have a floor session at noon, but I'll give you the last word, Senator Gazelka.
One sentence only, Mr. Chair. I mean, it's a common sense, consumer-friendly bill, and I want to give the plumbing board the last say on this, not the legislature. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, to that point.
Senator Thomas,
second last word.
I don't want to have the last, but as long as you brought that up, the ALJ in 2005 directed the Department of Labor and Industry to cease any temporary use of AAVs
because they are expressly prohibited by the Minnesota Plumbing Code. And I think that's what the law reflects right now. So just thought I'd point that out as long as...
Thank you, Councillor Thomas. Senator Kelash.
Quick question on private.
Sure.
This is a... I realize it is in code, but there is also questions about whether or not it's... it can create a health hazard. So I'm just wondering if it needs to go to Commerce for consumer protection kind of review or
health committee too.
Even, I'm sorry,
health
even,
committee
or health committee on that. So it's, you know, there's issues beyond just the code itself on this that have been reviewed several times, as the testimony said. It seems that this may be short-circuiting the actual consumer protection, and also the
long road.
These things are all related to each other. I really, you know. So,
thank you, Senator Kelash. I think it's a fair point.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Gazelka,
if I might just say that even the information related to Louisiana really wasn't a documented health hazard, and I don't think that we have any documented health hazards to this device any more than we do how plumbing situations like this are installed right now in Minnesota. Senator DeCryf talked about how we do it now, and that's not really considered a health hazard that we needed to bring before Health Committee, but it's my two cents.
Thank you, Senator Gazelka. We will be laying this bill over for further consideration, and committee is now adjourned.
Higher ed.
Higher ed. There you go. Let's get it there.
Take it higher ed.